What's going on, everyone? This is going to be a very interesting episode of Nerd Twin and Movie Podcast because I'm going to be all over the place. I've got a lot of stuff to talk about. I didn't do an episode last week, had a very rough week, so I'm going to double down on that this week and or double up. I'm not sure. We're going to talk about quite a few things today. So start off, I want to talk about The Last of Us. The most recent episode of Last of Us that came out last week on Friday because of the Super Bowl. Oh my God. That was one of the best episodes of television. Like, I think that episode was better than the one that everyone's praising with Gary Oldman. Gary Oldman? Wow, I'm drawing a blank. Episode 3. I thought this episode was amazing. These new characters introduced, it was just, they all did their role very well. It told a very concise story about this little QZ, and it was done fantastically. It was done so well. Like, I love the what they've done with this series. They've made it so it's very real. And what I mean by that is it gets me really anxious. Like, I have this genuine fear and dread to the point where my poor licensed therapy animal literally comes up to me and tries to do his job as I'm watching this because he can feel my anxiety going through the roof because it's just so intense. Every single character in The Last of Us has been out of this world, just so good. And I can't stop praising everything about this show. And I wonder if this is almost HBO's way of saying sorry for botching The Walking Dead. Because I don't know if many people know this, but The Walking Dead was initially greenlit and optioned by HBO, and it was going to star Thomas Jane, the guy who played The Punisher and many other great movies. But The Punisher, that is what really kind of put him into the Rick Grimes role. And they shot a pilot and then they just didn't like it and backed out. And that's when AMC came in and took over The Walking Dead, redid everything, and the rest is history. And now here's HBO with The Last of Us, knocking it out of the freaking park, and is delivering a show that is far, far better in almost every conceivable way than The Walking Dead. And I like all these memes and jokes that are popping up where it's like, we have zombies outside. What are we going to do? Hold on. Wait. Is it Walking Dead zombies or Last of Us zombies? What's the difference? Walking Dead, we go survive. The Last of Us, we're not. And I genuinely, genuinely love it. Anyone who knows me knows that I'm writing a zombie novel, a zombie comic as we speak. And I stopped watching The Walking Dead for a while, and I've purged my entire collection of Walking Dead books. And now it kind of sucks because I'm watching The Last of Us and I'm doing everything in my power to not let it influence my writing. So it makes me almost want to stop watching it just so, because it's so good. I don't want to make it look like I took anything, you know? So I'm almost hoping that it falls off just so I can go, oh, we had one bad episode. I'm done. So I don't have to do it anymore. But I have to admit that I am just absolutely blown away by this show. And I think that me not playing the game is a huge benefit to me because I have no idea about any of these story elements or anything like that. Like, when the whole thing with Sam, I didn't see any of that coming to the point where, I mean, I as me being who I am, I was watching, like, oh, he's going to turn. Oh, like, you know, I could see that coming. But like, when I'm talking about, like, anyone who played the game would see that character and go, I know what's about to happen. And I think that is a little bit of a disservice to you if you're watching the show, because you kind of know, like, generally where the story's going. I've seen a few clips. I just never really got into the game. I don't have the patience to play games like that anymore. Because when I'm if I play a game, it's literally a sports game on easy mode, so I can blow them out by like 40, just so I can just zone out and play. You know, that's what I do when I play video games. So when Last of Us and any games like that, they're just too much for me. And I'll watch the cutscenes at sometimes, and that's enough. But I always said, like, I remember playing, like, the one of the few games I did play was Injustice. And I remember thinking to myself, man, why don't they just take the cutscenes and make that into a movie? And then that's basically what The Last of Us is doing, but they do change and deviate a little bit in certain cases. And so far, everything that they've deviated from is for the better of the programming in the show. And that's one of the things, like, I preach that I want, you know, comic book accuracy, you know, I want all of that, but you can change things for the better of the material, and it's great. And I would never be upset with that. So when you just change things just for the sake of changing, like with Moon Knight, that I just don't like. Like, when you're talking about these changes, like the good thing about The Last of Us, I think what set this apart from the run-of-the-mill video game adaptation is that the creator of the game, the writer of the story, is a part of this. And they are following that design, but they're changing things where they see fit. And when they changed Sam to being deaf, the creator basically said, I can't believe I didn't think of that. That makes it so much better. And it does. You know, it adds an extra connection with him and Henry that makes it so that they have to be bonded more than just that they're blood, you know. Or like we talked about before on the podcast about, you know, like Bucky in the comics, Bucky is a little kid, you know, to change him to being Cap's age for the MCU, chef's kiss, beautiful. It doesn't have to be comic book accurate for the sake of comic book accuracy. But if it's something that is important to the character or important to what they are, then I feel it should be in there. But when you can deviate from the source material, but to portray it in a different light on like a big screen or you know, small screen, however you want to look at it, it's always welcome. And I would hope that people will watch this show, like executives watch The Last of Us and go, maybe we should involve the creators of these games and the comics so we get the best show. Because not for nothing, but we don't really have that many really good video game adaptations into films. You know, if you want to talk about it, like when the Mortal Kombat movie that came out, what, last year, a few years ago, is one of the best and it wasn't very good, that's saying something. And you know, you get Sonic, and now we have this, The Last of Us. It really gives me hope that the powers that be will go, that's the difference. That's the difference. The guy who wrote the original story is a part of this story, and that's why it's so good. And I hope that they're watching. And I also really liked they use a lot of practical effects, and of course the edit like adjusted it and increased it with CGI, but there were so many amazing scenes, especially in that final like little battle there, like when Ellie's in that truck with that clicker that was like going over the you know, the seats, that little kid clicker. When I tell you, I was so terrified and freaked out. I am not afraid, or like, you know, and talk about like horror movies, there's not many things that really get me. The few things that really get me are toys that come to life and weird cracking like movements, like the like or like we just out of the ordinary movements that like no normal thing new human would do. Those are the things that really get me. So like that kid was like a little doll that was like just bending backwards and flipping over the seats, and I was fucking terrified. My dog like freaked out. Like he like I said, he's a licensed therapy animal, and he can sense when I'm getting anxious. Like when I get panic attacks, he actually comes and calms me down and helps regulate my breathing. So he was looking at me like, Dad, is everything okay? And I'm like, it's fine. I'm watching a show. Go away. Like it was. It takes a lot to get me there in horror. Like you gotta, you know, a lot of different things. I'm very much easy. It's very easy for me to get behind, you know, comedy and like sad stuff, like, you know, things that I look at and like, oh, I can see it happening to me. That stuff really gets me. But most horror movies I enjoy because I like horror, but they don't really actually scare me per se or get my anxiety up. This show does, and that's a testament to how good it is because it's a TV show. It should not affect the chemical balance in my brain, and it does, and I love it. Yeah, it The Last of Us has just been nothing but top-notch, and I can't wait to see where the show goes because I have no idea where the story's heading, and I love it. What I'm going to move on to now, I'm going to transition into Ant-Man and the Wasp. Now, Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania, by the time this drops, it will be just outside the 48-hour window that I like to have my reviews and stuff on. So if you have not seen Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania, please like, share, do all that other stuff. Save it so you can come back later and watch it after you watch it. But I am going to go into spoiler territory in 3, 2, 1. Are you still here? Okay. So, there's a lot of people who are very upset with this movie. They believe that it was a very bad movie and they didn't like it for many different reasons. I've seen people talking about the forced jokes, which I will get into later. I've seen people say the story was horrible, the acting was horrible. I've seen a lot of things. And I did an initial review right when I got out of the movie, and I still believe this. Is it a great film? No, it's not. But it is a very good example of why a film does not have to be an Academy Award winning, amazing, great film to be fun and enjoyable. I loved a lot of Ant-Man and the Wasp Quantumania. There were a lot of things that I also didn't like. Like, I felt that in many cases the story was sacrificed for a joke, especially at the end. And again, we'll get into that in a little bit. My biggest issue was the Darren jokes, which ended up being just a long-running dick joke. And that's what she said. But I didn't like the excessive use of it. It definitely went over the top for me. That took me out of the film in a part of the film where I needed to be the most invested. And I did have an issue with that. I loved the CGI. I thought it was fantastic. I did see it in IMAX. So that may have been a contributing factor to why I was so blown away by the CGI and everything. That screen was enormous, and I felt watching it that I was in the right place, that I should have gone to an IMAX to see this movie, because it changed the whole spectrum for me. And I have to say that AMC may not be the most popular people in the world right now, but they have a very amazing setup where I went, and I might have to keep going there for all these big movies like Star Wars. I gotta see that in the IMAX, and with those chairs, people know I talk about all the time, I'm short, and most chairs in movie theaters either hurt my back because I have to lean up or hurt my legs because they can't touch the floor. So with these reclining chairs, they able to let me to actually sit back and had everything like aligned perfectly. It is almost worth alone just for that, more than the increase in price. So I might be seeing stuff exclusively at IMAX like that, any big movie like that. But back to Ant-Man and the Wasp. I really did love the Janet Van Dyne angles. They dove so much into her character, and I really love it because Michelle Pfeiffer is absolutely amazing and has been for however long it's been. I don't want to say a number, but I remember watching her in Batman in the early 90s, and here she is now still kicking ass and being amazing in a movie that I enjoyed. I really liked the the whole civilization that we saw, the designs of all those characters were just unbelievably awesome. I thought that a lot of the jokes in there with like the holes, like, and they paid it off later. I thought that it was very well done. That was some good humor. I like humor in these movies when it works right and it's not overdone and just saturated and just shoved down our throat, which is what Thor Love and Thunder was. I felt like they just said, screw this, we're gonna make a shitty movie where we're just gonna make everyone laugh the entire time and forget how bad this movie is. And people are literally calling Ant-Man the Wasp Quantumania one of the worst MCU films, and it's worse than Love and Thunder, and they're out of their minds. And it comes back to the things I keep saying. Just because you like it or dislike it has absolutely no bearing on the quality of the film or whatever you're talking about. So we're talking about good. The Thor Love and Thunder was very bad on almost every level. You can still enjoy it. I'm not saying you can't. I love the Green Lantern movie, which is a dumpster fire. Like, it's a horrible movie, but I still enjoy it. You can enjoy things that are not good. And conversely, you can dislike things that are good. That's perfectly fine. But we talk about quality. The story is definitely not as bad as they were saying. A lot of people are saying it's one of the worst stories, like, didn't make any sense. It made a lot of sense, and it was very well done, except for the parts where they sacrificed the story for a joke. And we'll get to that more about the final scenes and right before we start talking about the post and mid and post-credit scenes. But we cannot continue. We cannot go on until we stop and just revel at how amazing Jonathan Majors is. Jonathan Majors is absolutely, undeniably one of the greatest actors I've ever seen. I remember when I first saw him in Lovecraft Country, and I the way he portrayed these characters, he's just top notch. I mean, you talk about acting ability, the look, the you know, the gravitas, whatever you want to call it, he's got it. And to have him as this next big, and I mean big, bad in Kang is just a blessing. And I cannot say enough how happy I am that we have him in the MCU. And I just want to, you know, give myself another pat on the back. I just want to remind everyone that I called that he was going to show up in Loki. I literally said that I know Jonathan Majors is going to show up in this series and he's going to be in not full Kang mode. That was my quote. Not full Kang mode. We got him as He Who Remains. And now here we are. He's killing it as Kang, and I love it. He has when he's on screen, he commands all of the attention. No matter what's going on around him in any of the films and movies and TV shows he's been in, he has this presence. And to have him as this great big bad moving forward, we're going to start thinking about Thanos who. I'm telling you, Kang is the real deal. And I am so excited that they seem to have the right mode in telling his story. Let's talk about that ending with Kang. Why does everyone think Kang is dead? Can anyone explain this to me? Because have we not learned in the MCU, if you don't see a body, that man ain't dead? Let's think about this. Red Skull disappeared, assumed dead, shows back up in Infinity War. We're not going to talk about Bucky because, you know, obviously everyone who knows the comics knew Bucky was coming back. But then you look at who else? In this movie, we had Cross come back from the first Ant-Man film. When are people going to realize that when you get sucked into a vortex in the MCU, you're not dead? And the running theory that I've seen a lot is that he's going to come back as the Beyonder, and I could totally see that. But I think he's going to come back. Because what really happened was he was shrunk down into his time vortex tech. I can see him using that to become the strongest version of Kang. And then after all of the Kangs and Kang Dynasty are defeated, he shows back up and is like, thank you for making my job easy. And then that's the end of the film. If that happens, just remember, I keep calling this shit. One of these days, you guys are going to start listening to me. But when I love the fact that people are so quick to call basically that Kang is weak because he was defeated by an army of ants. Okay, let's dissect this real quick. They weren't regular ants, first of all. They were already advanced with quantum tech. They had built their own civilization with advanced technology on Earth. And then they go into the quantum realm and spent all this time advancing their tech and had an army this size that was bigger than Kang's army. And Kang's been making an army for this entire time that he's been there. Okay. Yeah. And then at the same time with MODOK lowering his shields, I mean, it makes sense how that version would get his ass whooped by all them ants. And then he still got up and was still whooping on Scott's ass. Still whooping him up. And I'm wondering why people are just so, like, against long-term storytelling. It feels like they are obviously setting up a return of that character. And that version of Kang has already killed Avengers. So he, in this, if what we can think of what he said is true, that means he killed Thor. I'm sorry if a literal society of army ants run over him. It's a little hard for him to survive that. And then he did survive and still was there to fight. Okay. So I think a lot of people are jumping at the wrong conclusions with that scene. But let's talk about the ending. And the biggest sacrifice of the story is this ending. And spoiler, obviously, I said it before I started talking, but I'm going to say it again right here because this is spoilers for the very end of the movie. So if you're still here, it's your fault. When both Ant-Man and the Wasp, everything's done, and they're in the quantum realm, seemingly locked there, looking out at the, you know, the society they just helped, you know, become free of Kang. The movie should have ended there. The movie should have ended there. That would have been a much better ending, because at least then you have this implication that there's more to this story to be told. Oh my God, they're locked in the quantum realm. How are they going to get out? What's going to happen? There's a lot of things that leave you wanting more, which is what you want to do. Instead, they just escape. And he's just walking, talking about how everything's fine. Oh, wait, maybe it's not. And then maybe it's fine. It'll be fine. Like that joke at the end, I think really, really hurt the film. And that was another thing that a lot of people said was there were no stakes. Like we knew Ant-Man wasn't dying. We knew none of the big names were dying, and that's a problem. I think someone should have died. Someone had like MODOK dying was not good enough. Obviously other people died in the film, but no big name character. There should have been a sacrifice that had to be made, you know, just to give the film more of a weight, you know. But like I said, I truly enjoyed it. I don't understand when people are comparing it to Love and Thunder. It's really nowhere near, and I mean nowhere near as bad as that movie. So I recommend anyone going to see it. I think it's a very fun film to go see. Just sit back and enjoy the pretty colors. I mean, it has a good story. It introduces a really great villain, and I think they did a solid job telling the story that they wanted to tell. There are some scenes though that will make that kind of thing, but it still was a very solid movie in my opinion. Now to the mid and post credit scenes. The mid credit scene. Well, well, well. Look who showed up. The Council of Kangs, including Immortus, Ramatut, and someone else. A lot of people are saying it's the Scarlet Centurion. I don't see it. I feel like it's more likely it's just a future version of Kang. I there's not a single bit of red on him, so I don't know why everyone. I mean, those are the three that we all assume as the big three minus Kang, you know. But the fact that we got the freaking Council of Kangs on live action, and it was one of the pans was almost like shot for shot from the comics, and I could not be happier with that. And to finally see Ramatut, everything I have been saying that Ramatut was only a matter of time before he shows up, and I have been saying it over and over again for probably about a year. Ta-da! And I can't be happier. I love Kang. He's one of my favorite villains. I'm a big villain guy. Like, I like Doctor Doom. I like Kang. I like Thanos. Like, these are the type of characters I gravitate towards. And I am so happy, obviously, that the books that I have been stocking up on are now worth more than they were a couple of days ago. I mean, I have two Fantastic Four 19s. First appearance of Ramatut, which technically is the first appearance of Kang the Conqueror, because he was later retconned to be a variant of Kang, and he appeared before Kang the Conqueror did in Avengers 9. 9? Yeah, I think it's 9. So, man, I can't be happier with what we got there. And then with the post-credit scene, the little tease for Loki, I'm very excited about Loki Season 2. I thought Loki was very, very, very well done. That was a very well done, and quality wise, when you talk about a storytelling and all of that, it was phenomenal. And I think that tease is definitely going to bring a lot of people to Disney Plus to see Loki, because that's a great show. But now that we've seen two versions of Kang, like, stories play out, and then we obviously saw the Council of Kangs, but now we're going to see Victor Timely, who is another version of Kang, and I am so happy that they're going this route, because Kang's a great character, and I feel they can use this very well to segue into the Young Avengers 2 with Iron Lad. I hope we get a Nathaniel Richards. I've heard rumors that the Fantastic Four castings are coming soon, starting with Sue Storm in the next few days, from what I'm hearing. And apparently Franklin Richards is going to be introduced as well, which is something I think is they kind of have to do what they've set up Kang now. So moving forward, I there's just so much to look forward to. And that's what I think this film did better than people are giving it credit for. I am now super excited for Phase 5 and beyond, with the Kang Dynasty and Secret Wars. And I love those properties as is, but they're starting this story. They're redoing their Phase 1 again with Kang, basically, and the new heroes that we have. And I think it's beautiful. And I really do feel that we are going in a very, very solid direction. And I'm not sure why a lot of people are hating on it. I'm a big fan. So I definitely think that is some thing to look forward to in the near future, is Phase 5 is going to be epic. We got Guardians of the Galaxy coming up next, and that's going to break all of our hearts. I've been saying it. It's going to hurt. James Gunn really went for the jugular on his way out, man. That's all I got to say. I could feel it in my bones. And I'm very seldom wrong. So we're going to now move on to the next segment. Like I said, we get all over the place today. I got to talk about the Elimination Chamber. I watched it live. I did a lot of clips on my TikTok about my reactions to it. The Women's Elimination Chamber was phenomenal. We knew damn well Asuka was going to win. So it was smart of them to have her come out last to make everyone else look good beforehand. Every match we had besides the Brock Lesnar and Bobby Lashley match just exceeded all expectations, in my opinion. Except for the final with Sami Zayn. I feel, for whatever reason, WWE refuses to use the disqualification clause with Roman right now, because in the last two pay-per-views, my complaint is, why not disqualify Roman to add fuel to the fire? Like, think about it this way. Okay, we talked about the Royal Rumble. It was supposed to be Sami Zayn's big test, right? So what should have happened was Sami should have interfered in the match trying to help Roman, got Roman disqualified, given the win to Kevin Owens, but the titles stay in hand. So everything that happened after the match can stay exactly that, except now there's genuine motive for you to believe Sami might hit Kevin Owens. There was zero chance that he was hitting Kevin Owens in that spot. That's what was the issue I had with that. Still, fantastic storytelling. Doesn't have to be perfect. Most times it won't be perfect. But then we come to this version. You've got Sami Zayn in Montreal, where he's from. Grew up 2 miles down the road, was what they were saying. And he had the biggest pop I have ever seen. They were chanting for about 5 minutes before Roman and Sami even started wrestling. They're just in the ring standing there because the crowd won't let them begin because they're cheering so loud. And then you screw Sami. You give us Screw Job Part 2? Come on. Why you do Sami like that? Again, disqualification is a possible way to lose a match and keep the titles. I understand and I get. You want Roman Reigns versus Cody Rhodes in WrestleMania. I get it. Big name match. It's finish the story, Cody Rhodes and the unbeatable Roman Reigns. I understand. I get it. And I want that too. And I hope that at least this time they'll let Roman lose. But when we talk about this match, with all of the extracurricular stuff that happened, all the ref had to do was call the match, disqualify Roman, and then everything else can still happen exactly as we got it. But you give Sami Zayn a win in Montreal. Why? Why didn't you do that? Because you could have done everything you did. Like, still, had the Usos come in, have the chair shots, but the chair shots should have got him disqualified, and then you have a reason for him to lay into Sami, and then for KO to come out to stop the beat. Like, it's just, there are so many times where I feel like the WWE tells this great long story, and then at the end just fumbles the ball. It's like, and now they're in trouble. Now, see, this is the issue. WWE has a problem on their hands because now the fans still want Sami. I understand it's in Montreal, and I understand that pop and that those cheers all amplified because he's a homegrown kid. So that makes a lot of sense. But at the same time, before they got to Canada, people were still cheering for Sami, eh? I mean, like, think about this for a second. This is on, like, Daniel Bryan to the next level, because you've built up this character now, this Sami Zayn character, which I love, by the way, who is the ultimate underdog, and you just had him lose to the Unstoppable Force. That's the David and Goliath matchup. Like, you want to talk about creating a great moment. And let's put it this way. Okay. you disqualify him, and then you run this like extra little beat with Cody and Sammy talking about that should be me up there, and then Cody offering to make it a triple threat. Could you imagine Sami Zayn, Cody Rhodes, and Roman Reigns triple threat match for the Undisputed Championship? Think about how quickly the seats will sell out, if they're not already. Think about how many people are going to tune in to that pay-per-view or premium live event, as I call them now. Think about it. That would be, you have the ultimate underdog versus the unstoppable monster in Roman Reigns, and then you've got the Golden Boy. You've got the makings for one of the greatest storytelling event that they've ever had. And they almost don't want to commit to it. They want to tease it. They want to dance around it, but they don't want to commit to it. I know. I'm not a famous writer. I'm not a WWE story, like, you know, writer. I'm not any of these things. So my opinion is just my opinion. But at the same time, I feel like as much of it as I've watched over the years, this is some of the best storytelling we've ever had, if not the best, but they're just not, as Michael Cole would say, finishing the story. WWE, it's time to finish the story. And I just don't know if they've got the balls. I feel like we're going to get a a Cody Rhodes loss at Mania just to get Roman Reigns to a thousand day reign. And again, this is one of those things where it may not be a joke, but the story is getting sacrificed here because they want to make Reigns this greatest champion of all time, which is honestly, I think he's extremely overrated. And I don't understand the appeal. Like, I was probably one of the few who enjoyed him as a babyface with a slight heelish action on the side when he was with the Shield. I loved that Roman Reigns. Like, I cannot stand this version of Roman Reigns, God mode Roman Reigns. I mean, it's just so boring. Like, it doesn't matter. Like, who, like, at this point, like, why don't they just bring The Rock, Goldberg, Sting, the Giant, bring back every single Hall of Famer that's still alive, put him in a ring, and Roman Reigns will beat every last one of them at the same time, because he's Roman Reigns. It doesn't, like, I never thought for an instant that Sammy was actually going to win, and that was a problem. This is a story. This is you're supposed to, like, build the intrigue to think that maybe the underdog can win it. Like, I go check out my TikTok, Nerdtween. I filmed and you know, I did my reaction as is was happening. Like, you saw it playing out. Like, it was they're screwing Sammy. Simple as that. Oh, look, the ref got hurt. He's gonna pin him 5, 6, 7. There we go. You know what I mean? It's very easy to see every time that Sammy had a chance to win, you knew it wasn't going to happen. The only match that I've seen with Roman Reigns in the last, I don't even know how many, since he's been champion, that I actually believed he was going to lose was to Logan Paul in Saudi Arabia. And the only reason why I thought that was one of the best matches I've ever seen, first of all, but I thought that they were going to have Logan Paul win it because he's such a big name. Like, especially in Saudi Arabia, that he's got a huge following over there, as well as the guy's a freaking follower magnet. And he showed up again tonight and screwed over Seth freaking Rollins in Elimination Chamber. And I really like, I'm looking forward to Seth Rollins versus Logan Paul at WrestleMania. They're definitely setting that up, and I'm so happy about that. But I digress. I thought that because it was in Saudi Arabia and they wanted to, you know, appease them, because I don't think there was, to my knowledge, there wasn't any title changes that night. I thought they were going to do it just for that and then have him lose it like the next night. Like, it didn't make sense, but it was believable. There was a couple spots where, like, oh my God, he might actually, there's no way they're going to let him do this. And then he doesn't do it. It's like, okay, all right, makes sense. Tonight in Montreal, Sami Zayn, while looking fantastic, and he put on another great show. He's an amazing wrestler, and I've been saying that for a long time. Granted, I haven't been saying it on record for a long time because I haven't been talking about everything like I'm going to do in the future and now. But they did Sami dirty tonight. I definitely think that there was a better way to do that, as I felt in the Royal Rumble. They're so, like, it's like that Star Wars meme. We were so close to greatness. They were so close. And I feel like they dropped the ball in both the endings. And not like they fumbled it, gave it up, and there's a touchdown by the other team. No, I mean, they still scored, but it took a couple extra plays, and I didn't like the route they took. But this is the last Premium Live event until we get WrestleMania. I am looking forward. I'm going to be watching that live as well. I may even do a live on TikTok and everywhere else, just to, you know, have, so you guys can see my reactions, not just hear my voice when I film my stuff. But hey, if you enjoyed this multi-fandom show, please, please do me a favor. Like, share, subscribe. I'm going to be doing my shows a lot more like this, where it's multiple topics covered at once. I'm a multi-fandom. I love so many different things, and whether or not anyone listens, I'm still going to talk about them. So I'm going to be, I really appreciate anyone who likes, shares, comments, does any of the interactions that help with the social media stuff. And if you have anybody who might like this, tag them below. Until next time, this is Nerdtween signing off. Stay nerdy, my friends.